Welcome to A Step Forward. In today's episode, I get to introduce you to an orientation and mobility specialist in Portugal, Sara Leal, who graciously came on and shared with us what O&M looks like in Portugal, as well as her program that she had to pitch to the city. And now it's helping so many more people with visual impairments in her hometown to be able to connect with one another and lead more independent lives. Welcome to A Step Forward, a podcast for ambitious VI specialists who are challenging the status quo. I'm Cassie Maloney, your new work bestie. With over 15 years of experience as an O&M specialist, author, professional development junkie, mom, and owner of Allied Independence, I have been through the ringer. And now I'm here to bring you a boost of inspiration, information, and our favorite, innovation, as we trade feeling overwhelmed for overjoyed while we create a significant impact in the lives of our learners and still lead more balanced, fulfilling lives. So grab your favorite beverage because we're about to take a step forward. Welcome back to the podcast. One of my favorite things about this podcast and this community is really connecting with you guys. I love these episodes that we've been doing where other people, other O&M specialists come in and share what they do and what it looks like, because all around the world, it's so different. If you want to be on the podcast, all you have to do is send us an email at theteam@alliedindependenceonline.com, and we would love to have you on. I want to introduce you to Sara Leal. She's in Portugal, and she has such an interesting life, which you will be able to hear about during the episode. Sara is a Portuguese orientation and mobility specialist who lives in Lisbon, Portugal. She started her academic journey by completing a bachelor's degree in sports science at the University of Porto in 2013. That's where she had her first contact with visual impairments and decided to pursue an academic degree in orientation and mobility. That search led her to move to the US and pursue a master's of special education from Northern Illinois University. Sara studied and worked in different states, Illinois, Arizona, and Florida, and a big part of her teaching experience came from working at the Miami Lighthouse for the Blind from 2017 to 2020. In that last year, Sara moved back to Portugal, and she now continues teaching as a comms in Lisbon. I can't wait for you to hear everything that Sara has to say and how she navigates being an O&M specialist, basically with two split types of her career. Welcome, Sara. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. Before we even begin, I'd love for you to tell our community a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so my name is Sara, or Sara in English. It doesn't really matter, but Sara, and I am 31 years old, and I'm Portuguese. I'm a comms who studied over there in the United States and worked over there for a while. I worked at the Miami Lighthouse for the Blind for a few years, and I just recently came back to Portugal. So that kind of resumes a little bit about myself.
That's really exciting. Why did you even get into the field? How did you even know about it?
That's a really long story, actually. So I really started in sports science. That was like my foundation. So I did a bachelor's degree in sports science in Porto, which is a city up north in Portugal. And in the last year, I started getting into adapted sports. So I worked in different disabilities like autism and cerebral palsy. So I kind of did a little bit of everything. But in the last project, the teacher had this jar full of papers that we had to pick, like a last project thing. And I got the paper for visual impairments. So I ended up going to a school, like a high school in Porto, and I met one of the very few orientation and mobility instructors here in Portugal. And I was just like, what do you mean? You get to be outside all the time and you have this immediate, you know, impact in students' life. Like, that's awesome. How can I do this? So I ended up doing my project with him, which was more focused on posture, gait, balance, and kids with visual impairments. And that's how I got into orientation and mobility a little bit.
Oh my gosh. So they just had orientation and mobility as like in an activity as for you to go check out?
Yes, and so many other different options. So it was real like picking up a paper that at the end would, change the track of my life so much. Yeah.
How did that person know about orientation and mobility if there aren't that many people who teach it over there?
So for what I can remember, because this was a little bit way back, he had his professional experience also in Angola. And so, yeah, I think I was lucky to meet one of the few around here. And at least the few classes I had to watch from him was so amazing that I'm like, okay, how can I start this? And that's kind of when I started to see that, unfortunately in Portugal, when it comes to academic degrees in orientation and mobility, there's none. And that's the part that he couldn't really help me at that time. He's like, Sarah, I don't really know where to direct you after this. It's awesome that you love this field, but good luck. Yeah. So that's when I started to kind of search around, see what I could do, like not college-wise, because I had my bachelor's already. I was almost finishing at that point. But I'm like, okay, how can I pursue this as a future career? Right. And so that's where the adventure began, kind of.
Oh my gosh. So how long were you in the States for?
It was almost 6 years.
Where did you go to school in the US?
I went to NIU, to Northern Illinois University. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of our symposium planning committee members who's been on our planning committee for many years, Molly Posley is there.
I don't know Molly specifically now, but I'm pretty sure she's amazing.
She's amazing. Yeah, she always keeps us on our toes and always knows. Like, I'm not very academic in the way I do things. Let's be very honest. I'm just like, can somebody tell me what they did? And I'll do that. That's my approach. Like, save
Yeah.
your white paper. I'm not gonna read it. I don't care the study, blah, blah, blah. Like,
Or you go directly to the end of
yes,
it.
I do. Like, just give me the abstract and somebody connects me with a person and you just tell me how you did it. What'd you do? Tell me what your lesson plan looked like. That's what I want to know. The rest of it, I don't. I have a hard time. But Molly's one of those people that she'll rein me back in, be like, remember, we have to be a research-based profession. And I'm like, I guess so, Molly. I don't know.
True.
Sure, there's value in it, of course, but I have a
But you
hard.
want to go straight to the point.
I do. I'm always like, I'm so glad that people are doing studies, but also just tell me the answer. Just tell me what it
And
is.
because it's a long process, and I think also you need to love to do the research. Also, I mean, of course, we all have questions that we want answers for, but going through the process sometimes is like, eh, no. Let's see if someone else can do it, and then we'll know the
That's
answers.
exactly why we're here. This is why I want to connect people to other O&M specialists so we can learn from one another. Because I don't do research, I've never been taught how to do research because I'm just not that minded, like academically minded in that way. It's really nice to know people who are. And to be able to connect with them because I wouldn't see things from their perspective if it was just like me teaching. I need those people to say, hey, by the way, I made you this white paper. It took me 3 years. I'm like, thank you so much.
Yeah, and to give you a reason to for you to do what you do, it's like a background to support most of the things that we do in our field or in any field.
Yeah, exactly. So you came to the United States and you taught in Illinois and Arizona and Florida and my little hometown. I'm not from Miami, I'm from Fort Lauderdale, but same
Pretty
area.
close.
Pretty close. A little bit of a drive away, but not that much. And then what brought you back to Portugal?
Honestly, COVID was the main thing. And also because I was married, well, I got married while I was in the US with my husband. He's also Portuguese. And with COVID, we just couldn't see each other anymore because he was still living here in Portugal. So everything was so uncertain that I decided to come home. Yes.
Wow, what a sweet decision, though. That would have
Well,
been.
I don't regret it at all. I miss the US so much, but it's so good to be home.
I bet. But I bet also your impact in Portugal is so big because there aren't that many O&M specialists there. Tell me what the landscape for O&M looks like where you live.
That's a very good question. So I definitely had to adapt a few things, at least, while the way I was teaching in the US and how I teach over here, sometimes I had to, change some very basic stuff that for me worked so well in the US and don't work as much as well here. One of the things that I notice is just a very cultural thing that Portuguese people, and I don't want to generalize at all, so I'm just going to talk through my experience. We can be extremely self-taught, which I had many cases in the US also that, we start teaching cane techniques and the person's like, "Oh, I've been using an umbrella and it's fine. Let me just keep using my umbrella or my broom or whatever." And you have to explain like, "No, look at this amazing tool I have here for you. So much better." And I find that in Portugal, even when I introduce, for example, the cane and things that, kind of go to the basics, people are still very like, "Well, that looks amazing, but my stick has been working just fine until now, so I'm going to keep using it." And sometimes I got into a few situations that I have to accept that for a little while for the person to let me actually, introduce new stuff. And it's a little bit of like very strong personalities. And very like, I learned from myself until here. You either give me something really good, or I'm just gonna keep doing how I've taught myself to do until now. So sometimes I would have to like not swallow my pride, but like, "But this is so good, I have so much to teach you." But they were just so, "No, but I've been doing just fine and I don't need all of that." So I kind of had to change my approach a little bit. As you said before, maybe not going by the book as much, or maybe not going through the step by step how it should be. And sometimes just go straight to the point of what the person needed just to open that door of like, "Oh, yeah, that was cool. That helped me in this situation," which in my mind, it's like, "Oh, there's so many steps before this." But but at least I can open the door that way. And after that, "Okay, let's backtrack a little bit and let me show you more stuff. Like, let's get rid of that stick now and let me give you a case." Yeah, so it was very interesting. Like, I had a few students right in the beginning that, I would start with pre-cane techniques and things that for me, it's how I always taught. And I would have very funny reactions about that. So I kind of had to change things a little bit, which was super interesting.
So, what did you change? Can you tell me?
For example, just to give a little context, right now I live near Lisbon, right? It's one of the main cities in Portugal. And I'm teaching in Lisbon, but I'm also teaching in an area where I live, which is like half an hour away from Lisbon, which is pretty rural. Okay. So I have still a few students who work, in agriculture and they live in very rural areas. So those are the most interesting cases because they figured it out a long time ago how to do their stuff. And, one day I meet them and I'm like, "Okay, let me show you all this stuff." And they're like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." I've been doing this for a long time, so let's go slow. And so that was one of the most interesting things that I just figured out that I had to go straight to the point with them. "Okay, so what do you need? What can I show you right now?" That would have to be on the first class. Like, "What do you need from me? Like today." And of course, in my mind, I knew they would need probably like cane techniques and very basic stuff. But they're like, "Oh, I need to know how to go from here to the store so I can buy, things for the animals or whatever. And I have a hard time going there." Like, "Okay, let's do that today." And if I could give them a very practical example of how me teaching them could help in their daily life, then I would have that open door that I would need to, introduce them to other stuff. So I couldn't get, for example, a typical first class of, a functional vision assessment and, introducing to pre-canes and stuff like that because they'd be like, "Nah, you're wasting my time."
Yeah, it sounds like they need that quick win.
Very quick. And that was one of the main things that I noticed how different it was because it was easier for me to explain the importance of the step by step while I was over there in the US. And I can see that, for example, over here in Lisbon, that it's a different maybe mentality, but more in the rural areas over here where I do a lot of my teaching, most of the students are really like, "Okay, I have problems in this, this, this. Let me help me figure this out, and then I'll give you more time for whatever you want to teach me.
I feel like adults in general are like that, where they've just been doing things their way for so long, and you can't really see what you don't know, what you don't know. So I've been really thinking about, have you heard that keynote speech about what is water?
No.
Oh, it's so good. You have to go on YouTube and check it out. And for anybody listening, you also have to go on YouTube and check it out. I know I talked about it in the last podcast, which Sarah, you wouldn't know about. But anyway, this speech is all about a fish engulfed in water and in a fishbowl. And it's asking, what is water? Because it's just surrounded by it and it's always lived in water. It can't separate out its experience from anything else. So it doesn't know if, you know, the water is cloudy, or it doesn't know if the water is clear and good. It just knows the fishbowl that it's lived in its whole life. And sometimes I think we can't see out of that. I mean, we all are like that. We can't see out of our own perspective until somebody comes along and says, here's a new perspective, or here's a new way of doing things. And if you're not, like they say, pain pills sell more than vitamins. And you can look up the industry statistics, and it's unfortunately very true, but people don't do new things until they're in pain, or people don't buy an alarm system. The number
oh,
one
yes.
that people buy alarm systems is after they
after you get robbed. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you convince people that there is a problem? You share them the quick win, but what else do you do?
It's just through direct experience. I really try to understand what the person really needs at the moment and what can create an immediate impact, to kind of show, like, this is one example of how it can help you and how it can improve your quality of life. So that's one of the ways that I've been finding that it's more successful, at least in my cases until here.
Yeah. And how do you get in touch with the people who need help? Do you work for a specific place? What does that look like in Portugal overall?
So at least in my experience, I have two different perspectives right now. So where I live, I'm working with the city hall. So I presented a project to the city hall once I moved over here to Portugal. And in this project, I have to find the people in this district that who need service. So that's a challenge, because we know there's a lot of people through the census, but we don't really know where they are. So it's really like a mouth to mouth kind of thing. I don't know if you say that in English, like a word for word
yeah,
by word.
Mouth. Yeah.
Word of mouth. Yes. So it's like a word of mouth kind of thing. And we also started to talk with medical staff, also ophthalmologists. So we're trying to create like this network to understand where this population is and how can we get to them and provide services. In Lisbon, I am working in a rehabilitation center. So people come to the center and there's not this search for persons who need service. So I kind of have these two experiences over here. Where I live, I need to search for them. And in Lisbon, they come to the center for services.
Wow. Okay. I have so many more questions about that. And I want to also say, let's start with the city and the search, because that is phenomenal and so unique too. So you basically pitched your job to the city. And
yes, which was very interesting as well, because no one really understands what I do.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of special ed directors and the altercations I have gotten into this year, because the special ed director does not know what I do or why I need to take a student off campus or something of that nature. And here you are pitching your whole job to the city. How was that experience and what pushback did you get?
So I was very lucky, because the first person that I pitched the project, she's the vice president of this district, and she had a family member who was blind. So that was really an opening for her to pay attention, be interested, and kind of wanting for the project to develop. Because one of the setbacks that I had right in the beginning was, well, how can we be sure that there's going to be people, you know, who need the service? I mean, can't they go to Lisbon? It's just half an hour away. And it's still a pretty small district. So there was that question of, oh, maybe there's there's not a lot of people who need it. So why are we going to invest in something that maybe is not going to, you know, be developing so well? And the interesting thing was having the meeting with that person, and she always lived here. So she knew, you know, more than half of the people. She was the person like, oh no, I know a lot of people who are staying in, you know, at their homes because they don't have any services, they don't have any support. So yes, we're going to try. We're going to do this for, let's start with a year. We see how that goes. We'll give you all the support you need. And she was actually, you know, kind of the one pitching to president and other people in the city hall to kind of start rolling the project. So I was lucky in that sense because people don't talk about rehabilitation for a person who's visually impaired over here. It's still that mentality of, oh, well, this happened to me and there's really nothing else I can do, you know, staying at home and having family and friends taken care of. And it's amazing that that's starting to change around here. I mean, I go to the center of the of this area over here and I have students walking around and everybody's kind of talking in the community like, oh, there's the girl who teaches, you know, people who are blind. And there's so many walking around over here. So it's been 3 years since the project started and you can see changes already. You know, people who stay at home almost every day and just go out to one or two places that they knew that they could go. Now they're just out and about. I have, you know, students meeting in coffee places and going for walks together. It's beautiful. So I was really lucky in the beginning of the process to meeting with the right people, for sure.
Yeah. And how good does it feel when you go out in your town square and see so...
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. I feel really, really, really so happy. That was one of the things that I really tried in the beginning was to create a community, because I always believed that that would be the main foundation, is having people to connect. And I think that's what makes the project so special. Of course, the service that I provide, I think it's super important, but also just the community that was created. Like right now we are with 22 members, you know, it's like a family, and that's the most beautiful thing.
That is awesome. Okay. So during that process, does it look like your typical rehabilitation process where you go in and you evaluate them and then you determine how many hours they need and you kind of work your way out of a job? Do they stay on with you for a while? Like, how does that work in your city?
With the project that I was talking about, it's more like a continuing thing. It's not really like a rehabilitation process like I do in Lisbon or I was doing in the US. It doesn't really look that way. And it's kind of also like a goal that also the city hall wanted, is to have this population being like overlook. So like making sure that this population was being not taken care of, but they want to make sure that all the participants in this project are being supported with the services that they need. So while this project is running, of course, I have always more people coming in, but the goal is not for them to come and leave, is to come and stay in the group and kind of be always connected to the different services that the project has.
Wow, because their needs will be ever changing as they become more independent, it seems, as well.
Yes, and because the project kind of developed a little bit. So we connected to social workers as well. And I recently also connected the project that I started over here with the school I work in Lisbon. And we also have a sports side of this group. So they've been to like boogie board lessons and yoga lessons. And we do a lot of events together. We go to theater, museums, and stuff like that. So besides orientation and mobility, which was what started and which I still do with all of them, but it's not the only part of the project. So I would say that experience that I have over here, it's becoming broadly more social than just only orientation and mobility. While in Lisbon, it's purely orientation and mobility. So it's been great to have those two experiences, because over here I can really connect with each person that comes into the project and spend time with them, which a lot of times we don't have that opportunity because, you know, as you said, we have the amount of hours, or in one way or the other, the goal is not for us to stay with a student for a long time, is for us to become not needed, right? So, but over here, the project kind of shifted a little bit to be more of a long-term community.
Okay, so let's move to Lisbon and the rehab work you do there. First of all, how do you even split your time? Is it 50-50? Do you work 40 hours for the rehab center and then you do everything for your project in your city on the side? What does that look like?
So right now I'm working 3 days a week, 3 full days where I live right now, which is called Mafra, by the way. So maybe I can just say Mafra instead of saying where I live. So I spend 3 full days in Mafra and I'm spending 2 full days in Lisbon. And the reasoning behind that is that although I have more students in Lisbon than in Mafra, the project that I developed over here kind of takes more time because it's so broad by now. So it takes more of my time than the students in Lisbon. And also because one of the things that I noticed moving over here to Portugal is that I loved slowing down a little bit so much on the daily run and going from one class to the other that, staying close to home was very good too. So I decided to spend more time with the project over here and take 2 days a week in Lisbon.
Yeah. So you work for them 2 days a week. Are you the only O&M specialist at the rehabilitation center?
Not anymore. And those are great news.
Yes, that's another thing. How are we growing this? How can we? What do we do?
I know. The moment I met the new instructor, I just wanted to hug her. I'm like, oh, there's more. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I always knew that there were a few O&M instructors. It's just like I feel there's a lack of connection. We still haven't figured out a way to create a platform, I guess, to connect. So that's something definitely to be worked on.
Yeah, I feel like you're the person to fix that issue. Not to put more on your plate or anything.
No, but I would seriously love to. It's one of the things I miss the most is having a team.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I loved the most in the US when I was working at the Miami Lighthouse because we had a great team. And, I would come from a lesson, have a question, or even like, okay, so how would you do in this situation? I have an immediate response, an immediate conversation, an immediate feedback from another instructor. And over here, sometimes I get home and I ask my husband, so let me tell about the situation. And you give me your opinion about it. Like sometimes it's just hard to have that feedback from another professional over here. And I would love to have that platform to do it.
Yes, that, as contract staff, I am the only O&M specialist in my area, and I cover three different part of my city and then three different suburbs too. And I will tell you, when I first got started, I'm the only one, right? But I didn't even know who the VI specialist was. I didn't find out the VI specialist's name. Only reason I found out was because I saw her name on the sign out sheet or the visitor's log for a school. And I said, oh, duh, this student has VI services. They have O&M services. How do I get in touch with the VI specialist? And I had to like track them down from the visitor's log.
Wow. So you kind of know how it feels, right? It's probably had the same reaction like, I need to know this person. I need to get, give me
Yes.
her contact.
Right. Yeah. And then the admin was like, I don't have their contact. I was like, what do I do? I just have their signature. I can't even read it all. Like, I just know that they exist, but I can't read their name. And it took me months to track down this person. And once we did, now we'll text back and forth. Okay, so I did have another question. Does your job at the rehab center, then does that one look more typical? And how many hours do you typically assign to your clients there?
It really depends on the case. I have, for example, a lot of students coming for very specific things. Like, I need to learn this specific metro station or this specific train station or this specific route. And so that doesn't take a lot of hours. But I also have students who need to learn from basics to more complex things. So, which is a longer process. I can say that in average, probably 3, 4 months that I stay on average with each student in Lisbon, some a little bit less and some a little bit more, depending on the goal they have.
Yeah. And
Yes.
do you see them for like 2 hour blocks at a time, or what does that look like?
It depends on the area where they live. So another reason why I chose to go to Lisbon only twice a week is that there I only take public transportation. So I take public transportation from where I live to Lisbon, which is like a 40-minute bus ride, which is not horrible, but it's still a 40-minute drive. And then from there to go to each student, if I need to go and meet them, if they don't come to the center, I have to take, you know, train, buses, boats, whatever. So... And some students I have that they are on the south side of the river. So Lisbon has a river kind of in the middle. So you have the north side of Lisbon and the south side. If I need to go to the south side, then I try to do, if the person is up to it and if they can, do longer blocks, because I might just see them, you know, twice or three times because the ride is so long and it takes me so long to go over there and then come back that I cannot see them, you know, every week or every 15 days. And sometimes not even once a month because it's really far. So I always explain to them like, okay, it's going to take me almost 2 hours to get over there. So do you mind for us to do, for example, an hour and a half, take a break, and then maybe do one more hour, you know, try to squeeze as much as we can. And I always make sure that they either record information or, you know, make notes. And I always, for example, if they have family members or friends, ask them to join the lessons to learn as well, so they can, you know, help out with the learning process, send me videos. And I always try the best I can to stay connected with them, even if I know already beforehand that I'm not going to be able to see them a lot of times.
That's really cool. A lot of our rehab centers here, people live there, the rehab center. So they come and they stay for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, and then they take all these classes. So that's what I was trying to figure out, what yours looked like. And yours looks more like rehab services, I would call over here, than a rehab center, but it all makes sense. There's that do both at the center and then also going out to the homes. It really
and outreach. Yes.
Yeah. Like outreach.
Yeah. Yeah. Over there is like a mix. Yeah, some students, if they can, they go to the center, and which is way easier. I can see way more people in one day if they meet me in the center. And, you know, for any kind of skills, we can make them transferable. That's the whole point. So if I can do that over there, perfect. And if later on, if there's something really specific that they want to learn, then I can meet them in whatever area they need. But unfortunately, a lot of our students, they either leave alone and they don't have a possibility to come to the center, and that's when the instructors go to them, and it kind of becomes of a more of a outreach format, very difficult outreach format, but yes.
Taking planes, trains, and boats to get to
the plane, so. Planes not yet, but boats definitely, yes.
I love that. I wish I could come and like tag along with you. It sounds like such a fun, diverse week. And with your programs, you must wear so many different hats. I want to honor your time and honor everybody's time here at the podcast. So we'll wrap up, and I want to ask you one last question. And that is, if you were to give our community one piece of advice to help them take a step forward to becoming their favorite O&M selves, what would you suggest?
I would suggest really taking care of yourself, you know, you, and then the next person. I feel that in our fields, and I mean, in every field, that it's connected with other people. At least for myself, I kind of tend to, okay, what I can do to help and to teach the most that I can. And sometimes I kind of forget about myself first. So it's kind of, what do you guys say over there, of pouring from an empty cup?
Yeah.
Like you can't pour from an empty cup. And I kind of neglect myself a little bit on that. And it's something that I've been working on, is that, okay, there's so much we can do, but for us to be able to do it, we really need to take care of ourselves first. And I think in our field that it's very important, because we love it, but it's also very demanding, and we know that. And sometimes we want to be there so much for our students and, you know, do the best we can. And sometimes it's okay to take a break and take care of ourselves for us to be able to be the best version of O&M specialists. And, you know, and be happy doing it and have the energy and have the time. So, yeah, so that would be my advice.
Oh my gosh, that's absolutely amazing. Well, thank you so much, Sada, for coming on our podcast today. It was such a pleasure and a blessing to be able to talk to you.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
Oh, so happy to connect with you. That's just one of like the best parts, right?
Yes,
Okay.
and I know that it probably is so much different. I mean, I know that it's different from all the time that I worked in the US, like what I'm doing right now, it's still, wow, it's so different from what I learned, from what I studied, for what I kind of format this field to be. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I hope that, through connecting here with us, maybe other people in Portugal will be able to reach out to you. Do you want to leave a way for them to reach out? If you don't want to, I'll just edit this part.
Yes, of course. I want to connect as much as I can. And that's why, I always enroll for the symposium. I just did the SWOMA conference also. And I'm still starting, I've worked for, it's been 5 years since I'm working in orientation and mobility. So I just started. I need to learn more. And so I'm open to connect and to do whatever I
Yeah.
can. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Cassie.
Impactful VI specialists are changing the way that we do things. The old way is no longer acceptable, and we get to decide how we're going to make more impact without burning ourselves out. I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to listen to this podcast. I would love it if you would leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you even just came and hung out with us on social media. I'm at Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find me at Allied Independence. I'd love to hear from you in my DMs. Let me know how you like this episode and anything that you took away from it. Until next week, just remember that all you have to do is take a step forward.